Hello and welcome to Culture with me, Robert Bowne. That's the first show of April and we've just had our first week of longer days, slightly warmer weather and a semi-decent input of sunshine. It's the beginning of spring and that's the time of year when we start to look forward to what's coming in the brighter, sunnier months. On the show today, I'm joined by a brilliant panel of experts to talk us through the season in film, music and art. And they are Head of Content for the Listen Gallery, Ossian Ward, music broadcaster and DJ Georgie Rogers, and the film critic Jason Solomons, no less. Welcome to the show, everybody.
Thanks for coming.
It's a less sunny day than... I mean, it's always sunny here in Studio 2, right? The beautiful confines, the grey and stylish confines of Studio 2. Thanks for squashing in here due to scheduling strangenesses.
I feel like string chicks in a nest.
Yeah, it's very good, isn't it? I feel like I'm the mother blackbird feeding you worms. Rather than try to string out this appalling analogy any further, let's go straight to Ossian Ward. Ossian, right. You're going to talk us first through 50 august years of Listen Gallery.
April the 4th will be the official birthday, 50 years since the gallery opened, very near to your HQ, round the corner. Yeah. It's been on Bell Street since 1967. When Nicholas Logsdale, the founder, he missed his train back to Oxford and sort of slept on a park bench outside Marylebone, found this old building, said, ring on this number if you're interested. And the guy said, no, you don't want to see it, it's a wreck. And he convinced him to let him rent it out. And he basically painted it up with his friends Derek Jarman et al., put on a show, then got expelled from the Slade for spending too long at his own show. And they said, you better start a gallery. So he started a gallery. Pretty soon he was showing Yoko Ono and Donald Judd and Sol Lewitt. And
I love an apocryphal tale. Yeah, I love it. And he's kind of never moved and Nicholas has never been moved with fashion. They've moved to, there's a Milan gallery and there's, you know, and a New York gallery. Yeah. But he stayed very much like a Bell Street geezer.
Yeah, and I think that was because, he learnt his trade on Church Street Market, I think, in a way. I think he likes that area. Mayfair is, one area the art world's gone to the East End. The art world will keep moving around, but Nicholas has stayed put. I think New York was always really important. He went there in the late 60s, discovered these guys, walked into Sol Lewitt's studio and, met all the minimalists and Carl Andre, brought them back to London. He could have almost had a gallery there in the 70s. He had a couple of shows in New York in the 70s, but that wasn't the done thing then, to have branches all over the world. So, yeah, it's exciting for us. I'm going to do a kind of archival that he's kept every shred of evidence, every postcard from on Kawara, So there's lots of amazing stuff there and hopefully more stuff to come in the autumn from the gallery side. But we're sort of celebrating in
so
a small way.
So you're doing it with a splash at the moment with Anish Kapoor, the current show, which is kind of who's always been with the gallery since the get-go, or certainly from his career.
Yeah, so, since 1982, his first show. So he's had 16 shows, and he's always making it difficult for the gallery. He's installed these enormous silicon works, which just about squeeze through the window, covered in this mesh, and they're sort of gory internal objects that look a bit like kind of viscera or tendons or something, and he's kind of teamed them with some works on paper and some hazy mirrors. It's all about this kind of maroon colour, which is partly body and partly a kind of almost spiritual sort of emblem of Anish's work. It's ever present. But the relationship between him and Nicholas is interesting. If you think about an artist and their gallery, it's like, do you grow up together? Does one outgrow the other? What happened? How does that relationship work? So there's sort of testament to having done that for many years.
And good vibes, 50 years of the Listen Gallery, something we'll probably touch upon as the year progresses.
I hope so.
As well. We're going to stay with a Listen artist, John Latham, who's got a show at the Serpentine.
Yeah.
Presumably this is a big boy. This is a sort of career retrospective.
Yeah, it's quite a quiet show. I mean, John Latham's an interesting character. He was one of the artist who stayed with the gallery sort of throughout his career. He's no longer with us, but I guess there aren't that many artists who were there in the 60s. And his first show was called The Listen Gallery Does Not Exist for 100 Years. So maybe it's not our 50th birthday. But he did, he was very famous for this performance where he took a famous art history text called Art and Culture and ripped it up and chewed it up with his students. So I thought we could do it because in the catalogue, There's There's Jason.
Thank you.
Georgie. So if you'd like to just chew on that. You can have one too, Rob.
Okay.
So what you do with his St. Martin students, he chewed up about a third of the book.
So I've just put it in my mouth and chewed up?
Yeah. And then, okay. And then what you do is you leave it for a year. It's not that nice.
And he left quite a lot of print on mine. How's yours, Jason?
No, quite nice and white. Mm.
Ah. And so he distilled this over a year, and then the Central St. Martin's asked for the book back, and he returned this vial of distilled art and culture. He was promptly fired, but the work went to MoMA. I mean, it's like a really famous example of what he called autodestructive art.
Yeah.
So he was even into burning books, which I know sounds strange in the 60s, but actually, you know, he sort of reclaimed that idea. And he made works that were instantaneous. So he would make a spray painting in which he would just fire a jet of colour or black at a canvas and then call that an event. He was really into the structure of time. And it's really sort of complex, deep thinker, sort of has baffled people for many years, but he's very influential. So apart from...
One of those artists that could not keep still, that seemed to do every single thing, from drawing to installation to sculpture to works with machinery. He was he made strange, crazy machines.
A thing called a Big Breather he made in 1973, a giant thing full of...
It's like a Russ Meyer B-movie. It's good.
It was this big contraption that held a certain amount of water, sort of, and it would go up and down with the tides. And then inevitably it burst all over Gloucester Road and sort of created a bit of a flood. But
an event.
Yeah, he was, you know, he was performative. He was a deep thinker. He was sort of a maverick, and still kind of people struggle with it today. But on the other side of the Serpentine, they've decided to kind of honour him with Douglas Gordon, Callie Spooner, and one of his old studio assistants, Laurie Prevost, who are all still influenced by him. So there's kind of another side to his practice where people are still learning from Latham.
So will
Latham.
People still be eating the programme?
Well, I mean, I think we've got a little way to go, but we could, we could get this into the MoMA if we keep going.
We're doing quite well. We'll see how our mandible survives for the next 20 minutes of the programme. We've got a couple of minutes, Ossian, to squeeze in the Venice Biennale. Oh. You'll be going off next month. Yeah. How on earth can we do this in 2 minutes? No one knows, but maybe you can tell us about the theme of it. What's it called?
Yeah, I mean, John Latham is in this show as well. He's key to the main show, which is curated by the Pompidou's Christine Massel. The title, which I said to your producer sounded like a Coldplay song, is Viva Arte Viva, but is actually about trying to reclaim the centrality of artists to the work. So, you know, in times of trouble, et cetera, et cetera, she wants to focus it back on the artists and make it sort of accessible. And the pavilion of books will be central to this, where John Latham will show. She's also introducing an interesting thing called the Tavola Aperta, where she will have artists who will come and have lunch with you every week. I think, you know, there are those pavilions in the central show, but then there are also the pavilions, external pavilions, the UK pavilion. We have Phillida Barlow, James Richards for Wales, Rachel McLean for Scotland. They'll all be interesting.
Anish Kapoor is at the Listen Gallery until the 6th of May. And if you're in New York or Milan, you can check out the Listens there too for work by Spencer Finch and Haroon Mirza. A World View, John Latham, is on at the Serpentine Gallery until the 21st of May. And the Biennale in Venice kicks off on the 13th of May and goes on until November. Take yourself off on holiday. Maybe avoid the crowds. Maybe go... I think September is quite a strange, nice, misty time to go. Thanks, Ossian.
Sorry to make you eat paper.
I didn't think I'd be having paper for breakfast.
No. I was just about to eat Clement Greenberg, so I thought at least it'd be kosher.
I was eating a briefcase. So
I've got the front page of it. I think
I've finished
the
mine.
Preface to Art and Culture.
Yeah, it didn't make you eat hungry.
Ossian Ward, thank you very much indeed. How are we going to follow that, Georgie Rogers? You've got some good things up your sleeve today. We're going to Gorillaz, back with a bang.
Back with a bang, indeed, yeah. This is Damon Albarn and Jamie Hewlett's animated project. So as you'd expect with something that's kind of a high concept digital thing, they get a lot of collaborators involved, and they've always done that. In the past, they've had De La Soul and Snoop Dogg, Mos Def, amongst others. This record that's coming out has 24 guests on it.
That's kind of like a birthday party, quite a decent birthday party.
Yeah. Right? I mean, I think it's just sort of Damon Albarn just pulling at all of these wonderful people that he's met along the way and all these amazing voices. And it is a bit of a who's who of relevant, credible, fresh, I hate the word fresh, but fresh talent, you know, cool talent. You know, yeah. You've got old school people as well on there, but the newcomers...
Stale talent.
Yeah, there's De La Soul, rapper Vince Staples, Pop Khan, who's like a dance hall, quite famous dance hall person around the world, Danny Brown, Kalela, Grace Jones, R&B and gospel singer Mavis Staples.
Good stuff. See, this is my end of thing. Grace Jones, Mavis Staples.
She seems to be doing the rounds a little bit. She just popped up on Arcade Fire's new track.
I've still got half an hour left. I'll come on your record, Damon.
Doing a few collaborations at the moment, she is. Pusha T, Mercury Prize winner Benjamin Clementine. He's got a beautiful voice. Savages.
Wear a shirt quite often.
Savages, Jenny Beth, Rag and Bone Man, who's obviously big in the pop scene at
big
the moment.
Voice.
Big
voice. Yeah,
he does wear a shirt.
Yeah.
Welcome to Shirt Watch with Jason Solomons.
And then you've got like Ray Black, Kilo Kish, Carly Simon, Danny Brown, Noel Gallagher.
Carly Simon as well. This is amazing.
It's quite an amazing list, really, of people.
We're going to have a slice of this. We need to make sense of this. So this is Andromeda featuring D-R-A-M.
Dram.
Or a small measure of Scotch whiskey, a dram. It's Gorillaz. Okay, it's Andromeda, new from Gorillaz, as chosen by Georgie Rogers. Jason Solomon's raised a salient point there while that was playing. How much of Gorillaz is on the record if there are so many collaborators?
Well, I think because it all sort of comes from Damon Albarn initially, I always think it feels usually quite Gorillaz-y.
Yeah.
This track is a real exploration of a lot of genres. You know, he's delving into trap music, dancehall, hip-hop. At times it has got that kind of blur, classic Albarn edge to it. There's gospel backing vocals on Ascension. It's got quite a lot of grit and punch. It seems quite eclectic. They've put about 3 or 4 tracks out.
How many tracks are on the record?
I think it was like 17 on the bonus one. But 14 maybe, I think.
We've got sort of 24 collaborators to accommodate.
That's a lot of different cartoon characters as avatars that you have to create.
Jamie's been busy.
Yeah, really busy.
Is he like, you know, there's people in Leicester Square, like, and Grace Jones comes into the studio and he does her.
How does that work? I want to see that happen.
They launched it with a surprise show at Printworks in London the night after that they announced the album. And they had every single collaborator, I think, on the album, either virtually on a screen behind them or in the flesh. Noel Gallagher's even on it. And him and Damon seem to be pals these days.
I know, isn't it?
Seem to have put the whole Britpop rivalry to bed.
Yes, exactly.
It's only been 20 years.
I know.
Yeah.
Everyone also, all the...
Just sort of Noel and Liam who don't talk to each other now.
Yeah, exactly. That's
the
true Britpop feud, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's Gorillaz. That's all we've got time for, Gorillaz.
Yeah,
we've got to kind of keep it going with Sylvan Esso next, Georgie, who are sort of were on the periphery of my consciousness. I wish they were more central to it. Wonderful stuff. Why don't we give our listeners a slice of it and you can tell us about it afterwards.
Maybe in a fire or crash off a ravine, people would weep how tragic so early. I was gonna die young.
Okay, that's Sylvan Esso. The album's called What Now? And we heard a bit of Die Young, Georgie. Fresh stuff. I know you hate the word fresh. I thought I'd introduce it with that word.
With their kind of unconventional love song there. You know, I was going to die young. Now I've got to wait for you, hun, sort of thing. And it kind of...
Good Romeo and Juliet territory.
But it kind of fits in with their whole thing. I think these guys are great. I actually had them on my radio show not too long ago in the flesh. They were so much fun to interview. They're from North Carolina. It's Amelia and Nick. And they're actually, I believe, married. So not only are they musically
productive. Is this their two surnames?
Productive.
Sylvan Esso sounds like he should be like left back for Arsenal. Sounds like a classic sort of
we could do with
Senegalese, footballer or something.
No, you don't get that vibe off them at all. No, not at all. Amelia, her voice, as you may have heard, it's sort of kind of a whole mashup of maybe like the kind of Coco Rosie, Joanna Newsom inflection with a bit of Bjork, Martha Wainwright, that kind of thing. And then Nick does all the beats, so he does all the production. And on this record, it's just huge production. production. It's the synths really are very ever present on this record.
I like this kind of noirish, kind of collegey drive soundtracky kind of synths there. Yeah. Nice stuff.
Yeah, really nice. And they kind of they're just quite good at making pretty accessible radio, and they just do it really well. And I saw them play live, and he was just throwing all the shapes. She was as well. They have a real lovely kind of banter and rapport. And when they were talking to me, I was saying, you know, when you met, did you feel like this is the person you've been waiting to meet all your life to make music with? And they said absolutely. And they said they're really big fans of each other, kind of as people and just musically as well.
And so one of them will hang around until the other one dies now, which is quite sort of fatalistic, but lovely.
Yeah, and fans of each other. Are we fans of them, Sylvanus? It sounded good.
It's good to get married and be a fan of your spouse.
I think it's. Yeah, it's,
I mean,
it helps.
Imagine being on the road making albums and touring. You'd spend a lot of time together.
I like Georgie's kind of sort of that bit late night Georgie there. Spending a lot of time together there. That's Sylvanessa with What Now?
Whispering Georgie.
Whispering Georgie. And finally, you're gonna give us a bit of some preliminaries on some of the festivals that you're attending, that we should all be attending, that our listeners should turn their attention to.
Yeah, I mean, you all need to come to Primavera with me, clearly, in Barcelona. It's my favourite festival. It's just so good. You can basically eat all the tapas in the day, lie on the beach, and then the festival kicks in at 6 o'clock at night through to about 6 in the morning. And their lineups are always incredible. Last year I saw Radiohead, LCD Sound System, PJ Harvey. There's kind of the big acts that are just musical and brilliant, and then it kind of kicks into a bit of a party, and there's an amphitheatre, which you can, I saw Caribou in the early hours in an amphitheatre.
Good for that kind of thing.
But
this
year you've got Arcade Fire, Bon Iver, Frank Ocean headlining. Frank Ocean isn't doing many festival slots. The XX, Aphex Twin, Grace Jones, Solange. It's always a very good lineup of very good people, and you just see so much music across the weekend. You're kind of by the sea with the wind in your hair. It's usually nice weather.
We're getting a bit of late night Georgie again.
And it's,
holiday Georgie now.
And it's a very, just like, a great crowd.
Is it camp? Just nice. Is it a campy
people,
place?
Or good people. No, you literally, you go home to a bed at the end of the night.
That's brilliant.
Honestly, it's my, I've been 3 years in a row.
Good, isn't it?
When is it? Where is it?
It's end of May, early June, the first weekend of June. I'm actually going on Hindu this year, which I'm a bit worried about.
Wow.
Maybe I won't go. Watch out. See you in Dealey Boppers in Spain.
It's not very hen, so it's good.
Okay, Primavera in Barcelona and End of the Road. Is this the one down in Dorset?
Yeah, it's at the Lama Tree Gardens. I've not been to this, but I'm going to maybe try and go to this year because I've just heard really great things. I think for people that might feel a bit daunted by some of the festivals in the UK, this one seems to be a bit smaller, more in an intimate affair. And again, always just a great lineup. Lots of really brilliant newer acts, like a lot of the new music that I've sort of picked up on in the last 12 months and playing on my show.
Holly, producer Holly is a fan of this show.
The Lama Tree Gardens are beautiful. These kind of architectural follies. It's very relaxing.
They used to have the first big chills were at the Lama Tree Gardens before they got big. Yeah, they were little.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
Chill. Yeah, so you've got Father John Misty, Matt DeMarco, Jesus and Mary Chain, Slow Dive, Pond, like loads of really great people.
I should be gazing at my shoes. A Slow Dive, all those things coming back.
And then it's good.
Power to it. Okay, so let's recap. Gorillaz released their new album. It's called Humans on April the 28th, as do Sylvain Esso with their latest What Now. And Primavera Sound takes place in Barcelona from the 31st of May. End of the Road Festival will be back at the end of August. It's the epilogue, I think, to the festival season, at least in the UK. Jason, thank you for your three fine choices. Mixing it up. There is light and shade
light
in
and
Jason's
shade,
choices today.
Chiaroscuro of cinematic choice today.
You're going to kick us off with Lady Macbeth.
Yeah, Lady Macbeth, which is coming out in April, the end of April, is nothing to do with Lady Macbeth, though, although it is about a woman who's sort of scary.
Yeah.
It's not the Lady Macbeth that you know. It's actually based on a play called Lady Macbeth of Mlynsk.
Yeah.
Which I'd never seen or heard of. And this is directed by a newcomer called William Oldroyd, who's done operas before, but this is his first film. And it is a terrific twist on the British period film. It has an amazing central performance by a young actress called Florence Pugh, who started in The Falling for Carol Morley.
Yeah, love that film.
Which was a lovely film, very strange film with that Tracy Thorne soundtrack. Yeah. She's progressed into, I think, one of the big stars of Britain in this performance. I mean, it's amazing. It's only her second major role. And she is intensely watchable as this rather murderous woman who, I don't want, no spoilers involved, but she's called Lady Macbeth, which is not a good start for you. She becomes the sort of woman of the house. She's only sort of 16 or 17. She becomes the woman of this kind of creaky, wind-blasted mansion on the heaths of Northumberland. And the sort of the bloke who owns it is a sort of, he talks like that, and he's a bit rough, like he's good managing Newcastle. And he goes off to sort of do stuff in the mines and sort of leaves her alone in this house, and she takes a bit of a fancy for the stable boy.
The stable boy.
Yeah. Right. who's not very stable, as it happens. And it becomes very... torrid kind of love story going on. But what's brilliant about this film is that there's a racial mix going on, which is not commented on by anybody. And I love the way that it's kind of tweaked the kind of conventions of British period drama and makes this house a character as well. It's really important that filmmakers often kind of set things in house and they don't sort of set out the geography of it. By the end of this, you know this house, you know which room to run to, where to go in it. It becomes an extra character in it, as does the wind outside. I think this guy's hugely talented, this William Aldroyd bloke. I don't know, by the way. He's not paying me. So, but I think this is one of the best debuts I've seen in British cinema for quite some time.
Well, let's have a little clip, give our listeners a taste of it. Lady Macbeth.
Do you love me?
Of course.
Do you adore me?
Of course.
Through hell and high water, I will follow you. You're home.
You've acted so very shamelessly and so very stupidly. You will never see that man again.
We did it so that we could be together here.
You did it for us.
We did it.
Lady Macbeth, new from William Oldroyd, featuring the much fancied Florence Pugh.
I just think she's a very good actress.
Well, quite fancy. I meant in the sense of if you were a betting man, like as in the 3:45 at Kempton, not like
put a fiver
on that.
Yeah.
She's hot.
Totally. Yes.
I mean, that's not the kind of show this is, Jason. Come on, I'm not like that.
We'll get to that a bit later.
Yeah, exactly. We could. Should we go straight? Should we do it then?
Why not?
Should we switch them around and go to Baywatch now?
Yes.
Okay.
Baywatch, the movie, is out. And I'm only doing because you were sort of interested in such matters. Okay. But it is interesting.
Is this a sop to me?
Everyone, okay. It's spring. You said, well, let's throw forward to the summer.
Exactly.
Let's take our tops off and enjoy Baywatch, which I confess to quite enjoying on the television in my youth.
Me too.
But this doesn't necessarily mean that the film's going to be, because I used to enjoy Chips on the telly as well. Mm. And that film has just come out and it is terrible. I mean, it is scraping the bottom of the chip pan. It is awful.
Yeah.
And it's homophobic, it's vile, it's sexist. It has no funny moments in it at all. Baywatch, from the trailer, looks actually to have its tongue firmly in its cheek and its crotches firmly in lifeguards shorts. And also it stars The Rock, who... he's formerly known as The Rock. He's not called The Rock anymore.
Not The Hoff, though.
No, it doesn't have The Hoff.
No cameo for The Hoff?
Do you know what? There is apparently a cameo from The Hoff as well.
The Rock and The Hoff.
The Rock and The Hoff together, between a rock and a half place. And
man.
The headlines right themselves. There's no Pammy. There is someone played, CJ is played by an actress, Kelly Rohrbach. I mean, there's a new sort of breed of young, hot actresses.
It's very recognisable as Baywatch.
They do say it's more than just swimming. That's the sort of tagline.
You.
So I'm thinking running as well
right.
to be involved.
Slow motion running?
Maybe some talking.
Splashing.
Okay.
But, yes.
Hopefully not too much
the
talking.
The plot is something, no one's really sort of interested in the plot, but there is going to be one, which involves Mitch, who is The Hoff, used to be played by The Hoff, and is now played by The Rock. He has to kind of cope with a spunky young lifeguard played by Zac Efron.
Should we have a little bit of a clip of this?
Well, I think it's quite a visual medium they watch, but I think we'll
let's see how we go. If it's boring, we'll just fade it out. Warning, this may contain talking.
Drugs, murder, dead body on our beach, and it all started once she took over.
Some people are up to no good.
We're going to have to do what Baywatch does best. The truth is, one of you will probably die.
Yeah. What? No.
Am I the only one that thinks this is clearly a job for the police?
Thank you, Blue-Eyed Demon. You got one job. Make sure swim-happy white people don't drown.
It's Baywatch, and it's coming out this summer. It's going to be a bit of fun.
I think it's going to be a good one. I don't mind this one.
An ironic titter.
Yes.
At your local, whatever it might be.
Very well-chosen word.
Should we finish with Mindhorn, a Indeed. Man who can see the truth? I saw this the other night.
Did you? You
yes.
May I say, looking at you, Robert, you could be in Mindhorn because you have quite a lot of the Julian Barrett about you.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll yes, sir. I'll take that.
Good. Well, this is Julian Barrett who was in The Mighty Boosh, and this yes. is his sort of first foray into sort of big screen. He wrote with Simon Farnaby, who also kind of co-wrote the Paddington movie, and they're in horrible histories of Simon Farnaby on the telly for kids, but actually he's got quite a good strain of adult humour coming through. I thought Paddington was rather good, and he's certainly
Paddington was wonderful and
was
charming,
brilliant. And
wasn't
the Paddington
it?
2, I think, is going to be also good as well, given the sequels tend not to be. This is sort of a little sort of skit that sort of happened on the side. Mindhorn is a character that Julian Barrett created, and he's rather there's 80s TV detective is what he is, but whose mind, he had an eye patch, and that is his sort of special power. He can see through this eye patch, and it kind of
you can see the truth.
It's a bit like MacGyver. Yeah. Was on the telly, and he could see the truth with this eye patch. And he's an 80s telly character, so he wasn't a real person. But what happens is that there's some terrible things happening on the Isle of Man, and the perpetrator will only talk to Mindhorn. So this washed up 80s TV actor, played by Julian Barrett, has to come out of retirement to play Mindhorn for the final time to solve the crime that's been going on the Isle of Man, because the bloke will only wants Mindhorn, who doesn't really exist, so that looks a bit deranged. So he goes to the Isle of Man, and there's all sorts of kind of, you know, in the way that British comedies do, they always kind of, I blame The Wicker Man for all this, but it's always part of the yes. wider thing. Like Hot Fuzz did it, and it's always like, well, who's the suspect, the vicar, and all of this sort of thing. So I thought it was very funny and very well done. Steve Coogan pops up in it as well. Lots of kind of TV favourites.
There's quite a lot of the Alan Partridge movie about the premise of it as well.
Absolutely.
The kind of like the hostage thing and la la la.
Yeah.
But it's amusing stuff. Julian Barrett's just very watchable, isn't he?
I think he throws himself into this. Yeah. So it's the sort of film that might run out of steam after about 30 minutes.
Yeah, does it work? Because I saw the trailer and I thought, I love the 80s detective skit.
Yeah.
And I thought, I just want to watch that for
an hour. Yeah, exactly.
There's quite a good art direction in it. There's a lot of really good detail if you
retro.
There's a lot of Bergerac-y bits.
There's
a lot of stuff that's very recognisable to people.
It's been bought by Netflix, so they've actually sort of tested it in America, and it's going quite well there. And I don't know quite why, because it does require a sort of in-depth knowledge of British TV rubbish detectives.
Yeah.
But I think, as I say, MacGyver was one of the. I think the US had their fair share of them too, and he's channeling all that. And I think it's a very, very good performance from Julian Barrett. He's a kind of timid performer in a way. He doesn't like to sort of, it's taken quite a lot for him to kind of become front and centre and kind of really throw himself into it, and I think you can feel that in the performance. There's a lot of gusto in it, so the performances are quite good, so it helps the comedy become more than a skit. You've actually got movie actors in it, and Simon Farnaby's in it as well, as a kind of, I don't know how to describe him, he's sort of squash obsessed husband.
Yeah
squash is a fine sport to put on the big screen. They won't put squash anymore, do they?
Do we want to have a clip of Mindhorn? Why should we have a clip of Mindhorn?
It's funny.
I think it's a funny way to wrap up the programme.
Suspected serial killer Paul Melly has escaped from hospital and is on the loose.
I would only speak to Detective Mindhorn. Oh, more people are going to die.
He thinks Mindhorn is a real detective.
Get me Mindhorn.
Ahoy there!
TV cop helps real cops solve crime.
Let's save some lives.
Richard Horncroft. Mm-hmm.
Twang! Look who it is. It's Mindhorn. Look at him now. What is this?
Well, that's called living the high life.
Yeah, too many biscuits.
Ah, many joys to be found in the ridiculous Mindhorn starring Julian Barrett.
I saw it at the London Film Festival, so quite a long time ago, October, and they didn't really know what they had here. And they put it on Sunday afternoon at the Odeon Leicester Square. So it's packed, and I think they were a bit nervous, like, is anyone going to laugh? And like Austin says, is it going to go over this half-hour threshold? And it went down so well that they thought, right, we'll delay the release and we'll put a big release behind it, and it's sort of sold really well. So I'm sort of quite hopeful for it. I will watch it again. So that's the best I can say about it. It is really funny.
They want that for the poster.
Yeah,
I will watch it again.
Under duress. Yeah. You pay me.
Okay, Baywatch hits UK cinemas on the 29th of May and the 26th in the US. Mindhorn will be released on the 5th of May, and Lady Macbeth will be on screens from the 28th of April. Thank you so much, all three of you. My guests, Jason Solomons, Georgie Rogers, and Ossian Ward. You've been listening to Culture. My producer was, of course, Holly Fisher. Join me again at the same time next week. But for the time being, I've been Robert Bound, and thank you very much for tuning in.